Hi, this is Ron Kaufman. I'm doing a recording of answers to interview questions posed by a journalist in Romania. What are three main differences between customers today and those from the 90s to the early 2000s regarding the interaction between companies and sellers? The first main difference is that product has become commoditized. It is easy to get essentially the same product, same features, same functionality from numerous vendors. So simply having a quote better product is no longer the competitive advantage that it was just 10 or 20 years ago. The same is true in terms of price. Simply being cheaper is a horrible place to be because it's so much easier in today's globalized world for someone else to cut your price and be even cheaper than you. And of course, being at that place within any business or industry sector gives extremely low margins and is therefore inherently a bad competitive place to position your organization. And the third main difference is that delivery has become dramatically accelerated. People can now use Federal Express, UPS, DHL, or digital download in ways that allow them to access what it is that they want to purchase faster than ever before. So simply being the local provider, simply being the convenient provider is no longer really enough when convenience, product, and price are now so easily provided from all over the world. Now, the positive difference between 10 and 20 years ago and today is that customers are more eager to work long term with vendors and suppliers who provide them with better value, not only in the moment, but also for the future. So, if you're a vendor or a provider who can not only solve a customer's problem, but help them anticipate future problems and solve those, not only get what they want in the present moment, but think about what they may want in the future, and then suggest or recommend those. These are some of the ways that vendors and suppliers can now stand out, earn customer loyalty, and earn more business going into the future. Second question: what are three tips you can share regarding superior service in order to attract customers and interact with them more efficiently? So the primary tip is to understand your customers better than ever before, which means rather than simply selling great products, what you want to become great at is asking great questions. You want to become the provider that helps people learn more about themselves, learn more about how they might use what it is you have to sell, learn about the benefits of what you have to sell and how it can help them achieve their goals, how it can help them avoid what it is that they don't want to have happen. And you learn all of that by exploring more effectively with your customers before you ever present a product, a feature, or a price that you're ultimately trying to sell. In today's world, it's more about asking great questions, not just about pushing great products. What are two mistakes that companies often do when interacting with clients? Well, number one mistake is thinking that a cheaper price will make a happier customer. There is a group of customers that wants only the lowest possible price. And for them, if that's the market that you want to serve, then obviously lowering your price is going to be the way to earn those customers. But those aren't the customers that I would recommend to a small business today or to any new business startup. I'd recommend that instead you add more value. And so that you actually find out what a person might want to use your products for, what else you can teach them about your products, how you can show them new ways to use your products. Help them understand how other people are using the products well. Have an understanding of which other products they're using from other vendors and suppliers, and show them how they might use your products in conjunction with the products of yours that you're already using to get better results. So, the more that you can do to understand the world of your customers as it is and as they want it to be in the future, then you can make good recommendations. The second big mistake that companies make is thinking that a customer who is quiet is a satisfied customer. It's the old idea of no news is good news. And what we've learned in today's world is that no news is actually quite bad news. Because if you have a customer who is happy but is not in communication with you, then you're not really going to be top of mind with that customer the next time they need to purchase something. And if someone else comes along with a better offer or with better questions or with a better style of engagement, you could lose that person that was a happy customer simply because you were not in contact. The second area is if you have a customer who's not happy but is not in communication with you, then the likelihood is that they're going to be telling other people. They could be telling them over dinner, they could be telling them in the evening, they could be telling them online, and you don't want that to happen. So rather than saying no news is good news, you should be reaching out to reconnect with all of your customers and make sure that they know that you want to hear from them and that you do actually hear from them whether they're happy or not. Next question, is the customer always right? Can you give me situations where the customer can and must be proved wrong by the company or seller? This is absolutely the wrong question to ask. There's no situation when a customer can and must be proved wrong. Customers are always right about what is important to them. They may be wrong about the facts, they may be wrong about the details, they may exaggerate, they may be confused, they may even lie, in which case they're not technically right about the facts in terms of what may or may not have happened. But they are right about what it is that they value, and they are right about the fact that they apparently did not get what they wanted or what they valued, and that's why they're complaining. So for example, somebody may complain to you and say, your service is really slow. But when you look at the records, you realize that your company has actually delivered absolutely 100% within the agreed contract timelines. But in their world, speed is what they value. And you can make them feel right about that by saying, you know, we understand and agree that speed really counts. Let me take a look at what happened and see what I can do for you right away. Now, you haven't agreed with them that your company was slow. You simply agreed that speed is important and let them know that you're on their side. So, for example, a customer may complain that your price is too high. But rather than making them wrong by saying that you're competitively priced or that they don't understand the terms and conditions of the offer, you could say to them, you know, you've got a very good point. Value for money is always important. Let's take a look at what you did buy and see if we can figure out something that's even better for you in your situation. Once again, we have not agreed with them that our price is too high, but we have made them feel right by agreeing with them on the importance of what it is that they value, which in this case is the dimension called value for money. If they complain that your staff is rude, you make them feel right by telling them that you agree that they deserve courtesy and respect every time they come to your office. If they say your website is confusing, you agree with them that user-friendly, easy-to-understand information is very important in today's world, and thank you so much for the feedback so that we can continuously improve. Notice in every one of these cases, I'm not making them wrong or us wrong. I'm making them feel right by agreeing with them on the importance of what it is that they value. How would I define a satisfied customer? What are the steps to getting a person to that state of mind is the next question. Well, satisfied simply means that somebody got what they wanted, but it doesn't mean that they're thinking of working with you in the future, and that's a problem. That's why we say that customer satisfaction is like looking in a rear view mirror, asking the customer, are you satisfied with what we have done for you? That means have done for you in the past. That's very different than saying, are you prepared to work with us in the future? Are there other things that you would like us to do? What else might we do for you that you would appreciate and value? What could we do for you next? How can we help you achieve what you want in your future? So rather than defining a satisfied customer and trying to achieve that, you should be trying to define and create a loyal customer whose loyalty will be experienced in the future. Next question, what is one of the biggest challenges as a consultant or coach? And in short story, how did we manage to cope with that and resolve the challenge? Well, one of the biggest challenges that our company has is when people in leadership positions think that building a strong service culture is the job of the human resources, training, or learning and development department. And so they say, yes, we need a strong service culture. Go tell the people in HR to make it happen. And that simply does not work. We have learned from 20 years of working with different clients that if the senior leaders in an organization do not declare service to be a top priority, do not walk the talk as an excellent role model, do not use the common service language that people can understand throughout the organization, if they don't enable and empower their people to give better service, if they don't remove the roadblocks that exist to stopping people from giving good service in terms of policies or procedures or regulations, and if they don't sustain the enthusiasm of people for service over time, all of those are rules for service leadership. And if that's not done from the top, what we've learned is that a service culture development project simply will not work. And the way we handle those situations today is that we only work with companies where the leaders at the top are willing to get in the room, work together, understand what it takes to build a strong and aligned culture for service, and then act from the top in a leadership capacity to help make that culture grow. Next question. How should a company receive a compliment? How should it receive a harsh critique? Well, when you get a compliment, of course what you want to do is thank the complimentor. But again, you have an opportunity here to agree with the complimentor on whatever it is that they value. So if they say, for example, I really appreciate the personalized service you provide, then when you thank them, you could say, you know, we absolutely agree with you that personalization is a very important feature of service in today's world, and we would like to personalize service to you even more. Could you help us learn a little bit more about you? And then you find out more about the person, about their family, about their company, about their career, about what their preferences are, their hobbies, whatever is appropriate, so that in your future, upcoming, in another moment in time interaction, you can use that information to make the interaction even more personal. If somebody compliments for you, for example, on doing something very quickly, again, you could say, we certainly understand and agree with you that speed is important in today's world, and we're so glad we were able to do this for you quickly. In the future, if you could let us know when you'll be needing more of this item, or if we could set up a schedule, we could make sure the deliveries are made for you exactly at the time that you most prefer or in a manner that is most convenient for you. Notice once again, we're using a compliment about something like speed as a way of then leading to additional and future business with the same customer. But what do you do when you get a critique? What do you do when you get a complaint? The first thing you've got to understand when you get a complaint is that that person made a choice to bring the complaint to you rather than taking that complaint viral or taking it out in the world online and telling other people. And so the fact that they're complaining to you is an act of customer loyalty. This is not a person that's a pain in the neck or a problem or someone you want to get rid of. This is someone who's already demonstrated that they are your customer, they care about being your customer, and they're bringing you a problem so you have the opportunity to fix things and actually keep them as a customer in the future. You have to understand if 1 out of 10 or 1 out of 20 or 1 out of 50 people are the ones who actually bring you the complaint, they represent 9 other or 19 other or 49 other people who may have had the same problem and never bothered to tell you. So the person who is the complainant is actually your best friend. And you want to be listening to that person, you want to be responding for that person, you want to make that person happy and be sure that they come back, and then of course implement systemic improvements so that whatever it was that they complained about simply doesn't happen again. What advice, last question, would I give to young entrepreneurs who are trying to build an online business with little money? First suggestion is make a specific promise and keep it. You want to develop a niche and then grow your expertise, grow your reputation, grow your content, grow your offers within that particular area. The key is to deepen your value and, if you will, get rich in your niche. If you're a small entrepreneur with a little bit of money, you're not going to be able to do some mass product offering. You want to be known as somebody as the best place to go for whatever it is that you want to bring. So let's just have some fun. Let's say your grandmother has an outstanding recipe for a pie or a cake that she makes for dessert, and you want to sell that recipe online. Then what you want to do is have pictures of your grandmother and tell the world about your grandmother and interview your grandmother and get her up on YouTube and show us how your grandmother makes that recipe and print that recipe and do the recipe with some beautiful graphics and have testimonials from people who adore eating that cake or that pie. You want to have examples of when and where that pie has been served. You want to talk about the history of the ingredients that are in the pie. You want to show adaptations and various versions of the pie. You want to run a contest so that people can send in pictures of them eating the pie. You want to own grandma's Romanian pies.com and get rich in your niche. And by the way, Send me the recipe. I want to eat your grandmother's pie. This is Ron Kaufman signing off. Thank you for the privilege of doing this interview. I look forward to meeting you in Romania soon.